When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to Belt to Loda, the officially unofficial podcast for The Expanse on Amazon Prime. I'm Jim.
I'm Aaron.
It's been too long. Aaron, I know we've already recorded episode one, and I will say this again in episode one because that was the first podcast we recorded. But man, it feels like it's been forever. The last year has gone by so slowly as an Expanse fan. I wasn't sure if it would ever come.
Yeah, and it's like there's just so much excitement in the community now because we just got the final book. Whereas I'm not that far along in the series. The final book came out. It came out 48 hours ago from the time of us recording this. And I'm already getting some pretty positive reviews of it. Seems like people are thinking it's a pretty satisfying conclusion.
Nice.
So that's kind of a load off. And we're all getting what Amazon's calling the final season of The Expanse, season six. I guess we should say also, maybe we'll talk more about this later on, but also Jim and I are engaging in some Expanse fan fiction. We are doing an audio, the very brief, like 10, 15 minutes audio drama called A Very Belter Christmas. So if you're excited about that, if you're on the Expanse feed, it'll just show up in your feed. But we'll talk about that here in a minute.
All right. So some of the other things we're going to talk about today, just to get everybody sort of ready for season six. I think we're going to do a sort of catch up on season five. Like, where do we leave everybody? What's the table set like for season six? I think we might talk a little bit about whether or not this is the final season, although, you know, we do some of that in the previous, which for you is the next episode. So I don't know. We'll see. But we're also going to talk about the trailers that are out there. And we have seen the first two episodes because we did get screeners for the show like we did last year. So we're going to talk a little bit about our overall impressions of that without giving any spoilers or anything. And just, you know, kind of get a feel for how this first third of the final season is going to go.
Because there's only six episodes. That is a somber thing that I keep coming back to. It's like, we're going to have Christmas and then about two more weeks and we'll be out of the Expanse. So,
potentially forever.
Where do you want to start? Do you want to talk about maybe where we left off of the previous season? Then we can talk about maybe the trailer and then we can talk about our thoughts on the new season.
Yeah, that's perfect. Right. So as far as like, I guess the crew of the Rocinante, they were all split up in season five. You know, you had Amos down on Earth doing things. You had Naomi out on the chain smoker, barely surviving. You had Holden just kind of sitting around for a long time.
And then waiting getting things, embroiled. Something happened to him. Yeah.
In an attempted coup, murder plot. Yeah. I mean, so let's take them one at a time, I guess. Naomi. She went through hell aboard the Pella, which is Marco's flagship, with her son, Philip, and trying to essentially extricate him from Marco's grip, his psychological grip on her son. And that kind of failed, although she did plant some seeds that might be, you know, taking root. And then she managed to remove herself from that situation by spacewalking over, doing a naked spacewalk over to the chain smoker and figuring out how to contact her friends.
Doing Naomi shit.
Yeah. Being an awesome engineer. And then also, you know, got rescued by the rest of her crew. So she's kind of safe and sound now, recovering from that. One person who won't be recovering from that experience is Alex. Alex died. He had a stroke while he was rushing to help save Naomi. So he did not make it out of the season, and I think we all know why.
IT stroke.
Yep. Claire, do you remember where we left Claire last season?
Claire had been bamboozled onto the Rocinante, with Amos recalling times where Holden was maybe willing to kill him. And we've all let bygones be bygones, right? We're just no bad blood between us.
Sure.
I'm glad you agree. Here's Clarissa Mao, I'm taking her on as an apprentice mechanic.
Yeah. And they kind of spend the whole season together, right? Claire and Amos.
Yeah. Yeah. They the asteroid attacks on Earth kind of throw them together, inadvertently spring her out of jail and find their way off planet. So
yeah, and
she's part of his tribe.
Uh-huh. And along the way, they pick up one of Amos's old crime buddies, Eric, and he ends up kind of helping see them through the hardest parts of the rocks hitting Earth. And then ends up on Luna. I don't know if they're going to do anything with Eric in season six. We'll see. Because that was one of the questions I had. Like, what is he going to do on Luna? Where is he going to fit into the criminal underworld there? And right. I guess he'll make his way somehow. Drummer.
He's a resourceful guy.
Maybe talk about Drummer a little bit. She has defected from the Free Navy, though I would say she has not defected to anywhere, right? She's just kind of pissed off everybody. She's sort not of in like the middle of this whole thing.
Yeah, she, as at the end of last season, she is not like flying under a UN flag. She is like, you know, the face of all the Belters who are not accepting the rule of Marco Inaros and his Free Navy. And mm-hmm. are wanting to distance themselves either from his atrocities or just that he's a massive prick. Like, I just did a complete rewatch of the whole show in the last week, and I reread book five, or actually read book five for the first time to kind of prep myself for the season. And I'd forgotten like how early they established like Marco Inaros as a character. Like, he's mentioned and Philip in season one, and then we hear rumors of him in season three. And then we, Klaus Ashford and Drummer have him in their clutches on two occasions and let him go for what seems like misguided political reasons. Now that we've got the whole, you know, we
seems smart at the time.
Foresight.
Yeah, but
like,
boy.
Yeah, they do a really good job of establishing, and Drummer's got one of the stronger arcs of the whole show in terms of, like, you know, her kind of growing up in the shadow of these elder belt statesmen, first with the more antagonist or like more brash and radical Anderson Doss, and then the more, you know, measured and patient Fred Johnson, and then, you know, molded also by her tutelage under Ashford, and you know, she just hates Marco and thinks what he's done is repellent. So,
and it didn't help that he was commanding her to kill the boyfriend of like her best friend. That probably didn't help either.
Right.
Cause that's
right. People
she
that she respects and admires. Marco, perpetrates an assault on Tycho that kills Fred Johnson. So she's got a lot of killed Ashford. There's a lot of reasons for her to hate this guy. So she's kind of fighting a one woman, war against him.
Yeah. And you know, we've mentioned him a lot, Marco, threw rocks at Earth, big rocks that to some degree, more or less, disabled and crippled Earth. I think that was one of the big complaints last season, is nobody really knew how devastated Earth was.
I kept the questions. I had three big questions coming out of last season.
Mm-hmm.
And one of them was, exactly how bad is the Earth fuck? And no spoil. I think we come back and get satisfying answers to those questions.
I agree. Yes, they took.
But it was left a little ambiguous.
Heart. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah.
We'll know a lot more about that very quickly in this next season. So Marco and the Belters or the Free Navy, along with like a lot of help from the Martians, actually rogue Martian elements, were able to take Medina Station. And sort of lock down all of the ring gates by owning that little piece of property there, and also by throwing rocks at Earth, kind of kept their fleet busy, and you know, was able to hold territory that way. And if you guys remember, at the very end of last season, the Barkeith, which was one of those defecting Martian ships, entered the ring and was, let's say, disintegrated by some unknown force, which we think is the same force that ended up killing the proto-molecule creators.
Yeah, like the red anti-energy clouds that we've seen in some of Holden's visions, and like you said, with the anti-protomolecule artifact, and it seemed like the ring gate's getting hungry somehow.
And then we go kind of through the ring gate over to Laconia, where there is some kind of protomolecule-esque structure being built above it. In orbit of it.
The sole surviving protogen scientist from the original protomolecule experience, Cortazar, I think is his name.
Uh-huh.
Somehow they've got they've got him across the gate. He's at this planet Laconia, and he's doing crazy things with it. We see in orbit a giant, what looks like protomolecule installation starship, bigger in scale than anything we've ever seen before.
Yeah. So they have set the table for big conflicts in this final season. You know, not just with the Free Navy, which I think is going to be a big one, but with some potential protomolecule or even something bigger and nastier than the protomolecule. So
yeah.
I'm really curious to see where it goes. We, like I said, have seen the first two episodes, but
can we talk about Bobby? I want to talk about Bobby and Abbasaral. Yeah, yeah. I think those are the other two big pieces on the board. Okay, I guess I'll talk about it. So Bobby has been, you know, she's the last few seasons, she doesn't really have a home, you know, she keeps having to commit what is apparent treason on Mars, which causes her problems with there. Of course, Mars is also becoming a ghost town because of the, you know, why terraform Mars and spend all that time if you can just pick up and go claim one of the 1100 new systems that's available.
Mm-hmm.
All this opportunity, but danger. And Bobby seems like she's on a track to work a lot more closely with Abbasaral because, you know, they've built up a mutual respect and affinity for each other, some trust. And who's the other? Oh, and Abbasaral, you know, she has been defeated by her political rival, Miss Gao, Nancy Gao, I think was her name.
Mm.
But she died. UN Secretary Gao died in the first wave of the terrorist attacks by Marco, the rock attacks. And now Abbasaral is essentially the god empress queen of the earth.
Yeah.
She's running things and kind of under the rubric of martial law. So she has a lot of power but a tricky situation because
a lot of responsibility.
Her fleet's pinned down protecting Earth. Marco's running wild in the outer planets, and Mars is kind of everybody in a gravity well is kind of hunkered down. While the Free Navy is allowed to recruit and rampage as they will.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's kind of where we leave the last season.
Yeah, that was pretty much all my big questions were, like, you know, what happened to the Martian ship that was going through the Laconia gate? How bad is the Earth fucked? What's the deal with Monica? That was the other big question I had. Like, it seemed like she was the linchpin in some of the Free Navy plans. And I got to say that two episodes in, I've gotten a lot better feeling about two of those three mysteries. I still am not exactly sure, like, you know, what was going on with the Monica thing. We talked about this on the Discord a bit, and I think the most plausible thing I saw is, and maybe there's more to come because, like, I'm not a book reader, but the most plausible theory I saw was that, like, there's a lot of theme of how jealous Marco was of James Holden. And, you know, is jealous of the fact that he's got badass Martian ship, jealous of the fact that he ran off with this girl, jealous of the fact that he gets all this press and attention personified by Monica. So, like, some of his attacks were deliberately at taking the things from Holden and claiming them for himself. So could it just be that? Yeah. Just, like, good old-fashioned dick measurement.
For sure. That's part of it. And she might have just been a distraction, but there were a lot of questions around that, too, and the actual details of her abduction and all that, but I don't think we're going to get many answers if you still have questions about that.
Probably. Do we want to talk about the trailer?
Sure.
And then I guess once we're done with that, we can get right to our impressions of the first two episodes and maybe just kind of talk about the plausibility of this being the final season. Maybe talk about our own Christmas project. Do you want to start with the trailer?
Yeah, so I watched the official ones that are on, you know, Amazon.com. There's a teaser. This is a real short thing. And then there's the full trailer, which after seeing the first two episodes, I'm happy to say is about, you know, mostly everything in there is in those first two episodes. Not shot for shot. There are a couple of shots that I didn't recognize.
85% is probably 90%.
And thematically, the first two. Everything they're establishing in that trailer is right at the beginning of the season there. So,
yeah,
and I assume that those themes will carry throughout the season.
Yeah. And it's I think this trailer sells the tone of the season pretty well, at least of what we've seen. It is a much more dour, somber affair. We are in the middle of a war for survival. I was, one of the questions I had was, you know, how will they treat the death of Alex? Because I know that doesn't happen in the books, because the real Alex doesn't fuck with underage girls, hotel rooms. He's a hero, and you know, Alex dies a hero on the show. But yeah. I was wondering, like, will they just kind of like, you know, pass the time and everyone's fine, and you know, we'll replace Bull, we'll put Bull in as a pilot. They don't do that. They spend a lot of the first few episodes with the crew actively dealing with the grief of losing a family member, a crewmate.
Yeah, which I like. They didn't have a lot of time for that, right?
Yeah, and they have to. It's like something they probably, they don't. But it probably adds to the character that, like, it personifies the loss, because, you know, our crew has been largely, Amos doesn't care about anyone on Earth. Other than the old lady that, you know, he made sure was taken care of last year. Holden's family, I think last we heard, is fine. You know, they're living on their self-sufficient farm, and like long term, who knows with the Earth. But like, Alex is kind of like the face of the this war, of people that are tragically lost. It personifies, it makes it personal for the crew. And I think it fits in really well with the theme, because, you know, Naomi, is, among other things, a belter. Mm-hmm. And it's very painful to be in a civil war. You know, that for her. And it's especially painful for, you know, Avasaral pointed them out as like, look at this thing of an example of Martians and Earthers and belters working together. But also they're unique in that capacity. And maybe that causes some friction.
Yeah. I mean, I think Holden has always done a pretty good job of understanding, you know, what her belter roots mean to her. And how, you know, I could see her being on a different ship with a less understanding captain, and just being forced into situations that make her kill people she knows and loves and doesn't think are bad. But I think Holden is, he's more understanding than that. And yes, she's going to be in situations where they've got to do things, but I think he's going to at least try to make those situations not as violent or confrontational as they could be because of that.
Here are the weekly highlights coming up this week on Bald Move.
Apple TV is releasing a new series based on Blake Crouch's novel Dark Matter. Aaron and I are big fans of his work, so we're picking up the new show on day one. Join us this Wednesday for the preview podcast.
The Shogun Limited series might be over, but that doesn't mean our Shogun coverage has to end. We've got the wrap-up podcast releasing this Tuesday, where we'll consider all your feedback and final thoughts on the series. And because we like the show so much, we decided to go all the way back to 1980 to cover the first TV adaptation of the novel. Do what you can to find a copy and join us this Thursday for the first of our four-part podcast on 1980 Shogun miniseries.
And finally, the latest first-run movie, The Fall Guy, features Emily Blunt and Ryan Gosling. He's a stuntman tasked with finding the star of his ex-girlfriend's movie when he suddenly goes missing. Is it a rom-com? Yes. Does that mean I'll automatically hate it? Not if the trailer lives up to its promise. Join us for the podcast on Bald Move Pulp this Thursday night.
You can find these and many other great podcasts by searching for Bald Move Pulp or Bald Move Prestige in your favorite podcast app.
We're getting geared up for the 6th annual Summer Badass Fest. And while we're working on a slate of apex badass films to enjoy, we've got an early action-packed announcement to make.
Just like last year, we're kicking off Badass Season with a live movie watch and podcast recording. We've rented out a theater for connoisseurs of action films and Bald Move fans that just want to have a great time.
Unlike last year, this year's movie is top secret. Hush, hush. No hints, except it's incredibly badass. It stars an absolute icon of the genre. We're willing to bet most of you haven't seen it, and it's going to be an incredible viewing experience with a packed house of Bald Movers.
Those of you who came to last year's screening of Total Recall know what a party it was. And those of you who didn't, now's your chance to experience it. Meet me and Jim. Order some custom movie-themed drinks at the theater's full bar. Then watch us record the full podcast for the movie. We reserved a venue over twice the size as last year, but seating is still limited.
It's happening Friday, June 21st at 7 p.m. in our hometown of Cincinnati. Get full details and buy tickets at baldmove.com/live.
Cincinnati's actually a pretty great city to visit, and we've got lots of details for side adventures on our event page as well. The Reds are playing the Boston Red Sox in their fantastic Riverside Stadium. The thrills of Kings Island just minutes away, and I'll be leading a kayak trip down the scenic Little Miami River on Saturday.
Again, get full details and get your tickets now on our Badass Fest 6 page at baldmove.com/live.
But we'll
see. One thing they tease in the trailer that I've been really looking forward to, it's like all I've hoped for as a fan, it's like I've always wanted Bobby to join the crew. I always thought that was going to happen like from season two, and they've resisted that. Like they've never, even when it seems like, oh, well, obviously in season four they'll come back, she'll be part of the crew. Now she's like mopping Martian floors or some shit, rather than like, God, I just want him to gallivant along with the rocks. They're at least doing an operation together, according to this trailer.
Mm-hmm.
Like they're going to work together in an official capacity, and I'm very happy to see whatever Bobby on the Rocinante we end up getting. All I've wanted.
Yeah, I do wonder why they decided they made the decision to not make Bobby part of the regular crew much sooner. Because like, did they not know what they had in Bobby? Did they not see that character and go, this is a fan favorite and we want to get them together? Or were they teasing us? And
well, she also got an arc in the book that they've been faithful to, right? Like, it does seem like that you...
She's not in the books much.
Well, that's what I'm saying. So at least they got her in. But you're right. It's like, why don't they just... But I guess in book five, they knew that she was going to factor big in the Alex's plot line. And you know, they need to keep us invested in her. And I guess that's a short story or two they could adapt. And they had to be tempted to just like, hey, you know, why not just bring her on to Rocinante, and her and Alex both, you know, Alex wants to go back to meet his family and she's going to go with him to do emotional support.
Right. And see the people that she grew up with and stuff like that. Yeah. She could be there for all kinds of reasons. He's a Martian.
Because it does blunt I will say that, like, that's the other thing I noticed going back in my rewatch, is they start laying the Mars shrinking that is pretty front and center in season four. Like, it's in the Mars, like, everything in the foreground is more exotic and fun, like the drug dealing and the weapons dealing and getting into Martian underworld and all that. But, like, you talk about how, you know, there's people waiting in line, unemployment lines. Never in Martian history has that ever happened. And this place feel like it's getting smaller, and they're decommissioning terraforming towers, and it's being presented as a modernization effort. But there's like a one like sentence, like, you know, someone expressing skepticism, like, yeah, right. And I think that, like, because when I read book five, it comes as a shock when Alex goes back, and there's like a huge difference between like what his memory of Mars was as this bustling boom town up and coming, and coming back. And it didn't quite land as well in season five because we had Bobby there seeing all of this happen in real time. Sure. So it's like a shock to Alex, but not to us. But like, there was, either way they adapted it, I think they had plus and minuses. But yeah, I wish he's with the crew.
I bet those people who didn't take their opportunity to go through the gate are really kicking themselves right now. You get all these terraforming platforms that have been disabled or dismantled, and all that equipment is gone now. And they're stuck on Mars, right? Like, where are they going to go? Luna, Earth, with already too much population to feed?
They
can't get through the gate now because Marco owns Medina. So, like,
yep.
Yeah, those people are fucked. I bet they wish they got out while they could.
Yeah. They also introduce this blonde lady that looks like she's Marco's lieutenant. I think you said her name is Rosenfeld.
Yeah.
And my first impressions of her, she's like this kind of like ice queen belter. And I think that was pretty, I think she's a pretty good villain and she's pretty easy. Like if you hate Marco, she seems like fucking hand in glove fit for him. And they play well together, which means they're just terrible, the worst people. I found her instantly hateable, and I like that in a villain.
Huh, okay. Yeah. That is a character in the book, book six as well. It's a different kind of character, though. It's not exactly the same.
They do that a lot.
One, it's a man, but B, the disposition of that character is, I think, a little different. But yes, they do this all the time. And I'm liking what I'm seeing so far of her in season six.
There's a lot of themes in this trailer of empathy and hope. You know, like Avastral talking about how she wants the Belters to feel, you know, what the, their loss and their death. And not in
which
like a
be
military,
dark,
like,
right?
That yeah, could, but it's, the way it's delivered, the way it's delivered in a trailer is more of like, you know, encouraging us the empathy. And she's looking for something that will kindle hope.
Yeah,
in the situation. So that's like, because again, this series starts in a very dark place, the middle of a particularly nasty guerrilla war, where Earth is hunkering down and enduring these periodic rock attacks to keep them pinned down, and the crew's on edge, and it's trying to find the arc towards hope. And then the other thing, I guess, that is a big surprise in the trailer, at least for me, was this sequence with a cute little girl and this weird purple frog looking thing making contact with her.
I will say that's seen...
still the most mysterious thing, yeah. Like the most kind of like, what the fuck, two episodes in.
Totally. It seems like it's opening doors that I'm not sure they can shut before the end of the season.
It is interesting. Yeah, let's before I get into, because there's one other scene that like boggles my imagination, because I wrote all these things down before we watched them, but the scene of the cargo containers dumping into the ring gate, like what in the fuck, like this seemed to be the thing that got captured the fans' imagination too. It's like, you know, I haven't read the books. I'm like, what the fuck am I seeing? Like, what possible military strategy is being employed here? Like, what the hell? But it's just quite an image. Like, just hundreds of cargo containers vomiting out of this large spaceship into the ring gate.
Are they going in? Was that the thing? Or are they coming out?
I don't know. If it's just doing like a 360, like shooting them out because of centrifugal force. Like, so is there a scene like that in the books? I guess that's the question I was interested in asking. Like,
not that I've read, no.
Interesting.
Not
okay.
After book six, I don't think.
All right. Impressions. We're 2 hours into a 6-hour story.
Mm-hmm.
What do you think so far?
Whew.
No spoilers.
I would say if you're looking for like a lot of the lighthearted stuff that happened in earlier seasons in The Expanse, you might not want to look too closely for it here, because this is a much heavier tone. I mean, the weight, and that's one of the themes, just the weight of everything is just dragging people down. They've been through so much shit. They're still in the middle of it, and it's just grinding them into the dust. And it feels like it. I mean, from everything... I mean, the lighting has changed in the Rossi. Like, you've got a lot more reds. You've got a lot more... everything is darker. And their attitudes are darker. And it just feels oppressive, which is exactly what you want in this scenario. Right.
The other thing that I admired rewatching The Expanse is how, like, funny the show is on average. Like, how sneaky kind of funny it is. Just, like, little character moments and stuff. these are characters that are not having a good time. This is not something that they want to be doing. And it's the, you know, you rejoin the action. They do another kind of like time jump 6 to 9 months ahead. And the career is, it's not been fun since the Earth got pelted. It hasn't been fun since. And I've always thought the Expanse does a good job in the makeup of like showing the physical state of the crew. Mm-hmm. You know, like Holden will sport a busted nose for a whole season because he got punched. Yeah. Or, you know, Naomi got fucked up doing that naked spacewalk last. And boy, when you see the crew for the first time, you're just going to be like, my God, these people look like they've aged 15 years.
Yeah.
And they haven't slept like but a half hour in that whole time.
The hilarious part being that I feel like Amos and Claire are the only ones who've kind of come out the other side better for wear.
Yes, the psychopath that escaped Earth and his murderous coat. Yeah, the lady that thought her the rest of her life was going to be spent in buried in a hole.
Yeah,
they're the ones that came out and be like, yeah, it's better than expected. Yeah,
yep. Yeah,
they still have what little light and humor comes from, you know, Miss Mao and Mr.
Right.
Burton being mechanics together.
Yeah, and they are, like I said, you know, with that stuff on the alien world or whatever, they are kicking open new doors, which feels strange for a season that is shortened from all previous seasons. This is the shortest season ever. Like, billed as the final season. I've seen the first 2 hours. I still don't know where that stuff is going, and I can't imagine it getting there in another 4, but
my the thing I thought when I saw that in the trailer, and you know, we haven't seen much beyond, you know, like it's where, like I said, I'm still perplexed about these scenes happening on Laconia.
Yeah.
But my thought was always like, well, this must be the trailer for the next season. Wink, wink. You know, like this is going to be like how we're going to get people super fucked. We're going to get the hashtag screaming Firehawks fired up for Save the Expanse.
For another
on Amazon. We're going to like try to get a miniseries on HBO. We're going to try to get like, you know, Fox or Disney to make a movie series based on it. And I still think my gut says that's what it's going to be. That like, this little girl in Purple Frog is going to be the opening of the gates in season 3. That thing that like hints to how much bigger this story can be if only someone will double our budget and pick us up for 3 more years. Because I can't imagine this going someplace satisfying in the context of this season.
Right.
And that's fine.
They might be able to connect it thematically, but
You'll hear us in the first 2 episodes, because we've already covered this. You'll hear us talk about like Fred about like, you know, what is the prospects for more seasons? And I started off pretty bullish, but I gotta say, I think the odds of Amazon picking them up are a lot lower than I came into the season.
I think they're effectively zero. Billing like, it as the final season in the trailer says we are not doing any more of this. Having only 6 episodes. Says this is not a big going concern for us. We just want to get it done with and off our books.
I'm perplexed because I've always heard that internally Amazon was happy with this show. I know it's an expensive show, but it's not anywhere near the most expensive show that's on.
No.
And it has a pretty good fan base. Like the Reddit's got 200,000 people on it. It just finished literally a couple days ago, the final book dropped, and it's getting pretty positive press. I don't know why a studio that is wanting to spend, but maybe it's a dollars and cents thing. They're spending $250 million on Lord of the Rings, and they're full of sci-fi fantasy. You know, they got The Boys, they got that. Like maybe it's just kind of like a call, like, hey, we've got a fairly neat place we can stop here, the second trilogy of trilogies, and then you know what? Let them go to another studio, see if they can make their way. But I'm a lot more worried.
I wouldn't be as worried if it weren't for the fact that this has now been dropped by 2 companies, two distributors.
Is there a reverse mystique, you think? It's like a shit steak?
Yeah.
A miss shit? I don't know how you...
Yeah, a mistink? Is that?
Yeah. There's a mistake on this show.
There's like, dude, nobody can figure out how to make this show make money. At least to the point where it's sustainable enough to do as many seasons as they need. Because I'm with you. I don't think like Dan and Ty wanted this to be the final season. I'm almost
or the showrunners. Like, I've not heard anything, but like the tone that I've heard before the season was there's lots more expanse and we'd be happy to tell the story.
Right.
But like apparently Amazon just not having it.
It's kind of wild. But yeah, I don't know, man. It would take almost a benevolent billionaire again to come in and pick this show up because they just like it. And where do those billion is Elon Musk going to come here and start Tesla TV? And you're going to get the only final thing.
Here's the only thing that gives me hope.
Yeah.
There are so many content places that they're desperate for content.
True.
And you have a completed, well-regarded science fiction series that has got a proven track record of being filmable. You know, like this isn't like Asimov's Foundation. This isn't like doing the Silmarillion. This isn't like Robert Jordan Field of the time. Like,
exciting action.
You got six. Yeah. You got five seasons of well-regarded science fiction, and like you know, they could keep doing more of this. I do think that like maybe the budget needs to go up a bit or something, but it's a bummer because like if this thing shuts, like so if they don't have a place to go by the end of the year. The production shuts down. How long does the production company keep the Rocinante set?
Yeah.
Before that gets busted up and put into the chip, but you know, when do they start putting the props on? When do they start releasing the studios?
Yeah. Screenbid.com gets all their,
VFX studios get reassigned. And like, once that stuff breaks up, it's essentially an order of magnitude harder because you got to rebuild all. I mean, maybe they got the foresight that they can store all this for cheap, but like that's the thing you worry about, the band getting back, going apart and doing other things and getting contractual engagements and signing deal. And then like, what does the expanse 7 through 9 look like if all you have is Dan and Ty? I mean, I guess I'd have a lot of faith in that, but like, they're helping. But there's a lot of stuff that's going on, like behind the scenes with the actors, all that stuff that would be hard to replicate.
I think so.
But I don't know. I've also heard rumors that there's a significant time jump in the next books. So like maybe this is a time that you could clean slate, you know? But I don't know when they say significant time jump. I don't know if they mean like a year and a half, kind of like, I think that like between like in the midpoint of season 2 and there was like a year and a half time jump or something. I don't know if they're talking about that or they're talking like 30, 40 years.
I think it's more of a Star Wars kind of time jump. Yeah.
Okay.
I could be wrong about that. I have not read this.
I will say this, that like if we get the end of the season, there's no buyers on site. I think I'm going to go ahead and finish the book series. And then if they do, then we'll just have, I guess, two book readers. Are you going to finish the series?
Oh, eventually. Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. Okay. Cause every time I've read a book, I find it a page turner and hard to keep down, even though book 5 was probably the closest, one of the tightest adaptations between book and show that I've seen them do yet.
They did some different stuff with Naomi, but it was the same stuff just for different reasons, different motivations.
Yeah, and like Fred lives and he died, but like that's not a huge change in the plot as far as I can tell.
No.
We're about 10 weeks out from House of the Dragon season 2, and it's time to prepare for war.
Which in our case means, watching a lot of Hot D and reading a lot of Fire and Blood.
Each week between now and June 16th, Maester Anthony and his co-host Steve are hosting a watch of each episode of Hot D Season 1. And then me and Jim are going to host a discussion of the differences between the events on that episode and how they're recounted in George R. R. Martin's historical tome, Fire and Blood.
That's right, I've resorted to reading dragon books. God help us all. We'll see if my fresh eyes add any new insights or predictions into Season 2.
Arm yourselves with all the lore you can for the battles ahead. House of the Dragon returns June 16th, but we've got you covered until then.
Check out all of our upcoming Hot D coverage on the Hot D feed or on Bald Move Pulp, available wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hey, it's time for another season of Why is Mr. Feeny a Car? The premise is simple. A Gen Xer and a millennial watch old 80s action TV to see what still works and what doesn't. In previous seasons, we've done podcasts for Knight Rider, Airwolf, MacGyver, A-Team, and more. However, this year we're doing a very special season of Feeny. We're going back and reviewing the very special episodes of 80s and 90s sitcoms. Come cringe along with us as Hollywood tries to warn our families of the dangers of underage smoking, drug abuse, alcoholism, eating disorders, and much more. We start out with the episode of Boy Meets World where a high school kid gets sucked into a cult. Worlds collide as the Mr. Feeny finally makes an appearance on Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Join me and my buddy Jay each week for episodes full of nostalgia and secondhand embarrassment. And don't worry, a very special isn't your speed. We've also got some all-time classic Knight Rider episodes to close the season with. Find Why Is Mr. Feeny a Car? Each Wednesday on Bald Move Pulp, starting April 3rd.
Since the dawn of time, we've been putting clothes on our back that identify us with our people, our group, our tribe.
And while Bald Move might be one of the smallest, weirdest tribes out there, transcending all concepts of border, class, culture, and creed, we still have respect for the old ways.
At support.baldmove.com, you can get t-shirts, hats, mugs, and more. We have something for every one of our podcasts, or just wear the four pips of the Bald Move logo with pride.
Bald Move merch beats running around naked, and they make a great gift for the Bald Move fan in your life. Join our tribe! Head over to support.baldmove.com and click on merch to start shopping.
Yeah, there's definitely some big surprises in store in the first episode or two that you have to be careful not to reveal. There's going to be things that probably make you angry. There's going to be the other thing is we talked about it being dour, but it's not dull.
No,
like,
no.
The plot is moving forward pretty fast. Lots of action. There's been a significant amount of space battles and like PDC porn in the first two episodes. Some daring raids and whatnot. This is a war. This is a war season, and so far it feels like
yeah.
There's a lot more intensity and compression of the plot. But it also doesn't feel like they're in a hurry. It doesn't feel like we are just barreling through and making huge logical leaps and stuff yet. So
yeah. I'm interested to see what we get from Avasarala this season, because I don't feel like she's really had her chance to shine yet. There is a moment in season two where she gets a win that she needs, I guess. But the thing I like to see her do is playing the politics. And I'm not sure how much room there is anymore for the politics. This is a war now. There is no talking anybody out of their position at this point.
But manifestly, it seems like she's trying to win some hearts and minds, not just maybe particularly on the belt, but like also around Earth, that you've got like, I said, we have significant answers to how fucked up the Earth is. And, if you got a situation where you potentially have a complete biosphere collapse and you've got, tens of billions of people stuck on this planet, the last thing you want them to do is lose faith in the leadership.
Yeah,
because then the churn just goes into overdrive, and your death toll goes up catastrophically.
Mm-hmm.
But they're doing, like I said, there's still a lot of interesting politics going on. Like you can see, like this new Belter nation, like having to struggle with, there's a shortage of water, food, and air in the belt. How are you guys going to solve it? Can you just turn on the spigots and it's turns out the well Wallace had a plenty all along, or maybe it's tricky to move supplies and stuff around in the belt. How does a revolutionary outfit handle that? Are they only good at tearing things up, or can they actually build something?
What kind of leadership is required to make this work? It's fascinating in the book, and it seems like they're going that exact direction in the show. For season six. So I'm super excited about watching the Free Navy portion of the show as well.
Yeah. And the Philip, there's no longer an explicit duel for his soul, but, Naomi predicted that he would have some trouble carrying the weight of what he's done. And I think there is some exploration of what that looks like in a teenager, being grown up with the father he had, doing the acts that he done and now I'm living with the reality, what does that look like? And I think those are some interesting work as well. I always thought the father-son stuff that Marco and Philip was really absorbing and interesting and also extremely gross, and there's still a lot of that on display.
Yeah, for sure. What else? I feel like we've talked as much as we can about these first two episodes without giving anything away.
Yeah. I'm very curious to see what other people think about it. And I'm also, because like, this is feeling very much like a conventional movie. Like, these first two episodes felt like a solid first act. And with six episodes, it feels like maybe that is, you're going to have a conventional three-act structure in this season. So, you know, because before, and it's one of the symptoms of that is like for so many seasons now, The Expanse has been remarkable. Like starting around season three, they had the cliffhanger, hour of plot. Like it's just like this is the most compulsively watchable show I've seen. These episodes, and it's not that it's not compulsively, but they've gone away from that cliffhanger dependent strategy. So now it feels like these last two episodes were of a piece to fit together. And I presume the next two episodes will feel that, and then you'll have a climax, a finale. So I'm predicting that we'll have much more of a conventional structure and not as many reliance on cliffhangers. Because shit, man, you're in on season six. You're going to finish this thing.
Oh, of course.
I don't think anyone gets halfway through season or halfway through episode two. It's like, you know what? Fuck this show. It definitely does. It feel like Expanse, Jim?
Oh yeah, totally. Maybe an expanse with the weight of a few extra rocks.
Yeah, a few billion dead hanging. Mm-hmm. But it definitely feels like Expanse. I'm not disappointed at all.
No,
it's just
a
much different tone and feel now in the finale. And I don't know, because I found there's a little bit of the old Expanse humor in some of the stuff going on in episode two. Like I said, Amos and Peaches. You know, generate a lot of that, but and I hope they can do that, because that's one thing like in Breaking Bad. You know, Breaking Bad is famous for that kind of dark humor, character based humor, and they just kind of all go away from it in the final season. I hope we don't do that.
It didn't Expanse. Make it bad in that show either. That show ended fantastically. No. One of the best endings to a show ever.
No,
but it was it changed as it went because it had to.
But I do hope we find a little bit of light and happiness in this final season, perhaps. And I also hope it's not the final season. I really do. I'm not as bullish as I was at the, even a month ago, because like I said, that's before, I started seeing the TV spots and that, and like, they're just heavily, this is the final, the final season. And it feels very much from the showrunners and from Dan and Ty talking that it's no longer a possibility to come back at Amazon. It's just like, maybe someone else will like carry the story. So, it's going to be the great what if books 7 through 9 just stay on the shelf. But I don't know. I hope. Cause a network that, or a streaming platform that doesn't have a solid science fiction show right now.
No.
Amazon, to be fair, is swimming with them. Apple got plenty.
Mm-hmm.
HBO. Doesn't have
Raised
real,
by Wolves didn't really work out for me.
Or maybe that's why they'd be shy of bringing
Westworld
one in. But again, this has got a pedigree.
Westworld.
Is it ever going to come back on television?
Who knows? I hear next year.
They started
sometime.
Shooting season four. I don't know.
Yeah, you know, they should pick this up. CBS, what's Paramount that? Plus needs to pick this up, because they want to lure over science fiction fans with Star Trek. I mean, they've got all that sci-fi you could just go to right after.
Can they
this.
Rename it as Good Trek?
They could take Voyager off. They could take Enterprise off. Maybe take most of Discovery off.
Just call this Star Trek Enterprise 2.
There you go.
And the Captain Holden's, The Adventures of Captain Holden. There's this Steven, take this this badge, put it on your chest. It's fine. It's fine. The crash couches are looking more like captain's chairs now, but it's gonna be fine.
All you gotta do is just fill in a little bit of that split circle, and you've got the Federation insignia, right?
There you go.
Right.
There you go. the Outer Federation of Planets. I'm looking forward to seeing what everybody thinks about that. We're gonna have a kind of an unconventional structure. We're gonna have the first two episodes And then we're going to come back for a dedicated feedback pod because we had to record these first two to make. I've got an anniversary trip that I'm celebrating with my wife to make all that work. And then to make our Christmas break work, we're going to do episode 3 and 4, release those, and do a feedback episode after that. And then we'll be doing a feedback episode, I think, for the last two episodes. Because those will hopefully be plenty to talk about. If you want to get in on any of that discussion, expanse@baldmove.com is where you want to send those emails. And because we do have screeners, we will be releasing these episodes at the exact date and time that they drop. So whenever they come out, either late Thursday night or early Friday morning, we will have a full and complete Bald Move podcast ready for you to enjoy. We've been going we've had a lot of discussion. Those we had a fucking mammoth 90-minute podcast for that first one.
Right.
So I hope you've enjoyed this preview and hope you're all pumped. I think you're going to really enjoy these first couple episodes, and I'm going to enjoy being able to watch episode 3 tonight.
Right.
Because I've not been able to do so since we've been waiting to do the preview and do these episodes. So now I can finally resume my watch. Thanks for listening. Expanse@baldmove.com. Oh, we almost got away from that. About the Very Belter Christmas. Jim and I, since this was the last season, quote unquote, of The Expanse, thought it'd be kind of cool. It comes out at Christmas. We love Christmas. We started thinking, what does Christmas look like in the year 2360 or the 24th century that The Expanse is having? What does Christmas specifically look like in the Belt? Mm-hmm. You can't put up a Christmas tree. There's not wood out in the Belt. Would Christmas still be a thing? How would it be?
These people were once Earthers. I mean, they had to take that tradition with them.
They probably brought those traditions and memories, but they probably drifted a bit, you know?
And it's hundreds of years in the future. Yeah, I mean, it's evolved on Earth in that amount of time. So
Christmas is not the same as it was Little House on the Prairie days. So to say nothing in the medieval time. So there's some, I think, interesting things to explore, and Jim and I thought it'd be fun to do something, and we came up with what this is. The conceit of it is Avasaral has commissioned, and this in my head takes place somewhat before the season 5, before the rocks have actually hit, and she's commissioned a UN cultural appreciation to foster a brotherhood between all the peoples of the Belt and Mars and Earth. An oral history of Christmas in the Belt. And we hired professional, we worked with an outfit called the Podcation.
Yeah.
That do a lot of audio dramas to get some professional voice talent to bring to life the roles. Not really long. It's like I said, 10, 15 minutes. And it just, talks about what Christmas is like in the Belt. And I hope you guys enjoy it as a little treat for the Expanse community. And we're going to be dropping the audio version of that here in the podcast feed if you're listening to Belta Loda. And we'll also do not a video version, but just a video version of the audio podcast with maybe some Expanse art on youtube.com/bald. But yeah, when that drops, you can follow us on Twitter @baldmove if you want to be aware at the moment that drops. But we're excited for Bald. We're excited for the Expanse. We're excited for Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
Peanut butter and chocolate, we're putting them together. So there's something to look forward to. expanse@baldmove.com if you got any feedback. We'll see you next week for episode 1. Until then, I'm Aaron
and I'm Jim.
See you, everybody.